Incredible story. Good morning, Central. How are you guys doing this morning? If I haven't had the chance to meet you, I'm Holly, and I am thrilled to be here today. In fact, last week I got to watch your Easter service online, and I was just so moved by that drama. And I just wanted to tell you guys that if you took a step towards Jesus for the first time last week, man, I'm so proud of you. You just made the best decision of your life. Jesus is the best decision, and he just keeps getting better and better. Now, if you have your Bibles, would you just open them up to the book of Ruth? Ruth is in the Old Testament, sandwiched in between Judges and then all the first and seconds. First and second Chronicles, first and second Kings, first and second Samuels. If you see those, back up a little bit, and you will find a small book called Ruth with just four little chapters, and we're going to jump in there in just a minute. Now, I grew up with three sisters. And see, we were known in our little town outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, as the Dwyer girls. We were only known by our last name and in a group. Nobody really knew who any of us were individually. And if you grew up with siblings, especially if you were close in age and especially if you were the same sex, you grew up used to being compared, right? Like that was a very familiar thing. Can anybody else relate to being compared to your siblings? Okay, so it was just a very normal thing to run into someone and they would say, hey, aren't you a Dwyer girl? And I would say, yes, of course I am. And like, you know what? We were talking last night and we were talking about your family actually. And we think that your older sister is the smartest. And we think that you're one that's just a little bit younger than you. She's the prettiest. And you know, the baby, well, she is absolutely the funniest. And then they would always say something like this, and you, Holly, we think that you are the loudest. Okay, what kind of honorable mention superlative is that? You know what I mean? Like, if it was a really good day, I might get, like, social or friendly, but most of the time it was in that loud category. And you know, I always thought that I had reconciled myself to being the miscongeniality of my family. But then recently, I'm starting to second guess that because, you see, when I read the Bible, I find myself questioning things when I read the Bible and I read about people that are just beautiful or they're very, very smart or they're just a cut above the rest. And I always sit there and I just think, of course God rescued her. Of course God calmed the storm for him, because they're a cut above the rest of us, because they are more committed or they are more wise than I am. And I'm just not like that. I'm just right in the middle. I'm just average. And I often find myself wondering, would God calm storms for me in my life? When I'm not like that, I don't get a lot of the best ofs. Would he still calm storms for me? And then I find myself wondering, would God calm storms that I cause? Does he do that for us? And maybe I shouldn't use the word cause because, you know, storms, they're just that, right? They come in our life. We can't help them. But anybody else like me and you're just proficient at complicating the storms that come in your life? You know what I'm talking about? You get this small bump in the road or you get this small storm, right? But somehow, some way, you're able to turn that storm into a stinking hurricane, right? I mean, this happened to me just this past week. We had some friends coming in town for spring break. Our kids were on spring break, and so we had some company coming in, and we live on a small farm right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And because we live on a farm, we have a four-wheeler. And it tends to be the favorite thing of all of our company is just to ride the four-wheeler. So I knew this company was coming. They had teenage boys, and I just really wanted them to have a good time and be able to ride the four-wheeler the entire time they were there. Now, there was a very small problem with that. You see, my husband lost the key to the four-wheeler the week before. Now, he would never say lost. He would say he misplaced the key the week prior. What he really did was probably hid it from my kids because he didn't want them on it. and then he can't remember where he hit it. We are getting so old, you know? And so no matter how many times we turn the house upside down, we just couldn't find the key. And as the day for our company to arrive kept creeping closer and closer, I would drop these really subtle hints, and I would say, hey, babe, I think we should call the locksmith and get a new key because our company is going to be here in 5 days, and I really think they would love to ride the four-wheeler. And then the next day, I'd drop another subtle hint, and I would say, hey, babe, I think we should call the locksmith because our company is going to be here in 4 days, and I really think they'd love to ride the four-wheeler. Well, the locksmith was never called, the key was never found, and our company arrived. And honestly, no big deal, right? Just a small little bump in the road. There's just no four-wheeler to ride. Well, in my mind, that wasn't good enough. And so I walked down to the shed, I yanked the ignition switch out of the four-wheeler, and I went to see the locksmith myself. And so I am standing in line at the locksmith, waiting for the key to be made, and my husband sends me a picture with no words, and it's just a picture of the lost key that he just found. Isn't that the way it always goes, right? Anyways, no big deal. Just put the ignition switch back on, and we're good to go. Except when I yanked that ignition switch off, I was really frustrated. And I did just that. I mean, I yanked until that thing broke free. And in the process, I broke several other things on our four-wheeler. So now we're hundreds of dollars into this repair. It's going to be in the shop for about 3 weeks. And I just turned this small bump in the road into something so much bigger, into a storm so much bigger than it had to be. Do you guys ever do that? Do you ever find yourself just complicating the storms in your life? And maybe it's storms that are much more costly than a broken four-wheeler. Maybe your teen misses curfew, and you just stay on him and on him until the two of you aren't speaking for days. Or maybe your bank account runs dry, and you open credit card after credit card, and now you're maxed out with seemingly no solution. Or maybe you go through a difficult divorce. Instead of just taking the time to heal and let yourself get healthy again, you jump right into another relationship, and now you have problems on top of problems. Do you ever find yourself wondering, will God help me with the storms in my life that I complicate? If you have ever wondered that, not only are you and I going to be really good friends, but I want to introduce you to a lady named Naomi. And I know, I told you to turn to the book of Ruth. Well, that's because Ruth is the main character. And see, Ruth is the perfect one, okay? Ruth is the one that never forgets to send her friend a gift on her birthday. She's the one that studied instead of partied. She's the one that makes gluten-free pancakes for her kids every Saturday morning. I mean, that's Ruth. You know what I'm saying, right? She's not a box top lady, you know? She don't buy anything that comes in the box. But that's Ruth, and she's perfect. She's the kind of perfect that gets a book of the Bible named after you. She's also the kind of perfect that, if I'm being honest, I have to often unfollow on social media because it just doesn't do well for my heart. And so we're going to do that today. We're going to unfollow Ruth, and we're going to look at a secondary character in this book of the Bible. Her name is Naomi. And now let me just tell you, Naomi, I can relate to. Because you see, Naomi, she is a hot mess. I mean, she is a mixed of poor circumstances and poor decisions. And you have to know this, though. Naomi is Ruth's mother-in-law, okay? So Naomi and her family, she had a husband and two sons. They were Israelites. And what that means is that they served the one true God, the same God that we're here worshiping today. But more than that, it meant back in that day that God had given their family a special gift. He gave them a piece of land, and he told them that I want this land to stay in your family for generations to come. He did not want them to leave their land or to sell their land. But see, there was a storm that came into Naomi's life. And what happened was the economy crashed. The economy crashed, and there was no food to be had. There was no recovery plan in place. And I want us to see what Naomi and her family do. In the first chapter of Ruth, it says this: in the days when the judges ruled Israel, a severe famine came upon the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah left his home and went to live in the country of Moab, taking his wife and two sons with him. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife was Naomi. So instead of staying put, Naomi and her family, they decide that they are going to get the heck out of town, right? So understand this, because in that day, in that culture, that decision to move away, to go see if we can find food somewhere else, to go look and see if the grass was greener somewhere else, that decision alone was a decision not just to walk away from the gift that God gave them, but that was a decision to walk away from God. They were, in essence, turning their back on God. See, Naomi and her husband left the gift that God had given them for greener pastures. And have you ever done that? Have you ever traded in what God has gifted you with? Maybe it's the peace of mind that you once had, and you traded it in for a quick numbing or a quick rush, and now you're battling these awful desires that you never thought you would have to deal with. Maybe you traded in your spouse or your family for what looked to be more exciting. Maybe you traded in your retirement account for what looked like a great business deal. You see, the thought of a quick buck looked so good. He looked like he was going to be a better husband. The thought of forgetting my stresses for one night, it sounded so alluring. I never, ever thought that trading in the gift that God had given me was going to cost me my peace of mind. I never thought it was going to cost me my bank account. I never thought it was going to cost me my marriage. Have you ever traded in a gift that God has given you because the grass looked greener on the other side? See, this is exactly where Naomi is at. She traded in her gift from God. And see, once they were in this new country, once they had chased the greener grass, things go from bad to worse for Naomi. You see, her husband and both her sons die. And now she is in a foreign place, and she has nothing. She has nothing. No husband, no kids. She has no money. And in that culture, a woman had very, very few ways of making money. She had nothing left. She was at rock bottom. She had nowhere to go. Except there was this one silver lining, this one sliver of hope. You see, Naomi learned through the grapevine that the economy back in Israel was starting to revive, that things were starting to turn around. So literally with nothing on her, nothing but the clothes on her back and this loyal daughter-in-law named Ruth, Naomi decides that she's going to head back to her hometown. And Ruth decides that, hey, I'm going to go with you. And so together, they decide to go back home. Isn't it nice when we have a place that we can go back to when we hit rock bottom? You know, maybe you don't have that in your personal life, but I know this church and I know this team and I know that they want to be that for you. They want to be the kind of place that you can come back to. No matter how far you've drifted, no matter how far you've gone, Central is the kind of place that you can walk into and you can come home. And I want you to look at this because the Bible tells us that as soon as they got back home, that Naomi is greeted by her old friends. I mean, they are like, Naomi, girl, where you been? We missed you. And I want you to see what Naomi says to her friends. She says, do not call me Naomi, she responded. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made life very bitter for me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. And I really wish that her friends would have just butted in here and just said, but Naomi, at least you are home. At least you are back where you are supposed to be. You know what? You might be inside these church doors today. You might be logged on and you might feel more desperate than you did the last time you tried church. You might be a little more banged up, a lot more empty inside. But we can celebrate that at least you are home. At least you have taken a step towards God. God can do something with someone who is banged up, but they come home. But Naomi's friends, they didn't say that. They didn't correct her. So Naomi, she continues on and she says, why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer and the Almighty has sent such tragedy upon me? And I think this is the saddest part of all, because you see, Naomi didn't just trade in the gift that God had given her when she went to chase greener pastures. She didn't just trade in the gift that God had given her. See, as things began to unfold and her life began to get harder and harder, Naomi traded in more than just the gift from God. She traded in her identity. You see, Naomi, the name Naomi, it means pleasureful, agreeable, beautiful. And she said, don't call me that anymore. Don't call me that. Instead, I want you to call me Mara. And Mara means bitter. She's angry. Is she angry at God? Is she angry at herself? Probably both. But regardless, she is not the girl who left. She was not the girl who made the decision to leave. She's a new person, and it's not a better version of herself. She's bitter. And she didn't just give up her gift from God. She gave up her identity in God. You see, Naomi was bankrupt of possessions. But more than that, her soul was bankrupt. Her hands were empty, but so was her heart. And have you ever been there? I've been in Naomi's shoes before. I've been in a place where my soul was more bankrupt than my hands. A few years ago in my own life, I had some storms come into my life that I couldn't control, just like any storm. But I made some poor decisions, and I definitely complicated the storm. And so I was reeling in this mix of poor decisions and some really bad storms. And in the middle of all of that, it sent me into a tailspin, and I found myself in a pretty dark place emotionally. I began to struggle with anxiety. I never had experienced that before. If you struggle with that, I know you know what I'm talking about. It's the dry mouth, chest pounding, the feeling of impending doom, heart racing. And after I'd been struggling through this for a while, I remember talking to my girlfriend one day, and I remember saying, I don't even know who I am anymore. I feel so weak. I feel so broken. I can't even remember the girl that I used to be. And I know in that moment I sounded just like Naomi. Don't call me Holly. Call me anxious. Don't call me a strong woman. Call me weak. And see, this is exactly what happened with Naomi. And what I think is the hardest part of all is I want you to look at this. She says, why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer and the Almighty has sent such tragedy upon me? See, she's telling her friends, God did this. He caused me to lose everything. He let my husband die. He took my sons away from me. You see, Naomi has no problem believing in the power of God. But what her theology is missing in this moment is the goodness of God. And have you ever found yourself in that place where you just said, how did I get to be this broken? How did I get to be this empty inside? How I'm just such a shell of the person that I used to be. How did I get here? And why did God allow this? Why did God cause this? Why is it that it is so much easier for us to believe in the power of God than it is to believe in the goodness of God? Don't we do that? And just like Naomi, we have this gap in our theology. Yes, God is powerful, but you know what? He is also good. He is so, so good. And he is about to show Naomi just how good he is. You see, just a few days after they had arrived back in their hometown, Ruth decides, you know what? I'm going to go and try and find some work. We've got to put food on the table, so I'm going to go and try to find some work for us. So Ruth finds this man, this farmer. His name was Boaz. And Boaz said, sure, you can work in my fields. Well, Boaz happened to be a very kind man. And so at the end of her first day of work, Boaz paid Ruth in what she needed most. He paid her in food. And he paid her in more food than she could have possibly earned in a day's wage. I mean, he just kept lavishing more and more food on her. He just lavished her with food. And so Ruth goes home after that first day, and as she's walking into her apartment with her arms just filled with food, more than she could possibly have earned, you know, I'm sure Naomi is sitting in the living room of the apartment, probably laying on the couch, you know, soaking in her misery, binging probably on Netflix, having a glass of wine, and just sitting there. And when she sees Ruth walk in and her arms are just filled with food, man, Naomi jumps off that couch. And she's like, wait a minute, what is going on? How in the world did you get that much food? This is what she says to her. This is what she says. Where did you gather all this grain today? Where did you work? May the Lord bless the one who helped you. And Ruth replies, I don't know. I mean, the man I worked with today, his name is Boaz. May the Lord bless him, Naomi says. He is showing his kindness to us as well as to your dead husband. The man is one of our closest relatives. He is our family redeemer. Look at those words, family redeemer. See, when Naomi says that, a light bulb just went off in her head. Because here's the deal. In their culture, back in that time, in order to keep that piece of land that God gave each family that was supposed to stay in the family for generations to come, in order to keep that land in the family, if a man died, they didn't put that land up for auction. They didn't put it on Zillow. Instead, any other relative of that man had first dibs on buying his land so that it would stay in the family. But there was a catch. There was a catch to this, okay? Because here's the thing. If a relative wanted to buy that land, he also had to marry the widow of the man who died. Right? Now, some of us might say that is an added benefit. Others might say that is some major baggage. No way, I'm out, right? I remember my father passed away when probably about 15 years ago, and my mom a few years later was getting remarried. And I remember the day of her wedding, and I just said, Mom, man, Gene, that's the man she was marrying, he must feel like the luckiest man in the world. And my mom's like, why is that? I'm like, well, no, not only does he get you, he gets five new kids. He gets four in-laws, son-in-laws. He gets six grandkids. I mean, he has got to feel like the luckiest man in the world. My mom looked at me and she goes, Holly, all that's baggage. That's what they call that. So whether you see this cultural rule as a blessing or baggage is beside the point. But in this moment, Naomi is realizing, wait a minute, we do have a family redeemer. See, in this culture, if you had a relative that had some cash on hand and happened to be a pretty good person, that would go a long way. And when Naomi sees all this food that Ruth is carrying in, more than she could have ever earned, and Ruth tells her that this food comes from a man named Boaz, the light bulb goes off. And Naomi realizes, oh my goodness, I have a kind cousin who has some cash. And so that food didn't just fill Naomi's belly for the first time in a long time. It began to fill her with hope. She began to come alive again inside. She was dead and she began to light up inside. And look at how filled with hope Naomi comes. Look at this. She says to Ruth, my daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women. Now do as I tell you. Take a bath, put on perfume, and dress in your nicest clothes. And then I want you to go to the threshing floor. Be sure to notice where he lies down. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. He will tell you what to do. Now, that's really weird cultural context. Basically, she's saying, I want you to look pretty and I want you to go propose to this guy. Now, she reminds me a lot of my mom here. Now, if my mom were here this morning, she would never admit this to you, but my mom sent me to college to find a husband, not to get an education, 100%. And I know this because when my mom was leaving me on that very first day as a nervous freshman, we were in my dorm room, and she says to me, the last thing she said was, now, Holly, listen to me. I know that money's gonna be tight, but you go get yourself a part-time job. You work hard. She didn't say get good grades. She said, you keep your blonde roots touched up. You keep going to the tanning bed. Sorry, this is 90s, y'all. Don't do that anymore. And she said, and you take care of those nails. Don't you let them get all funky. You go to get yourself a pedicure every now and again. And she said, here's why, Holly. Because, see, if you have all those things, you're keeping up with all those things, and your husband falls in love with you that way, with your hair highlighted and sun-kissed skin and some nice nails, then he will forever consider those necessary maintenance costs. But if he doesn't, if he falls in love with you and your roots are all grown out and your nails look funky, those will always be extravagant purchases. And I'm telling you, you want him to consider those necessary maintenance costs if they're ever going to make a newlywed budget. I know. I had a wise, wise mom. I've never had to apologize for getting my hair highlighted. But that's exactly what Naomi sounded like in this moment. She says the same thing to Ruth. Girl, listen, I got a man for you. He's a great man. He's kind and he can help us. But here's what we're going to need you to do. We need you to look pretty. We need you to get your eyebrows waxed, curl your hair. And then I want you to go and I want you to ask him to marry you and I want you to ask him to buy our land. Ask him to be our family redeemer. And Ruth, being the one who always gets it right, she does it. And do you know that Boaz says yes? Boaz says, yes, I'll marry you. Yes, I'll buy this property back, this property that your mother-in-law sold off. I will buy it back. And if you kept reading, you would find out that they got married. And then the Bible tells us that the women of the town said to Naomi, those friends that greeted her at the beginning, they came back and they said to Naomi, praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. You see, Boaz didn't just take care of Ruth in that moment. Ruth, who I think we could all agree deserved a Boaz. She deserved someone to bail her out of that storm. She didn't get herself into that mess. Naomi did. Ruth deserved a Boaz. But see, Boaz didn't just do this for Ruth. He did this for Naomi as well, for the one who made things worse. Boaz bought back what Naomi traded in. And here's what I want us to hear today. Boaz was a wonderful person, but he was simply a picture of Jesus. God gives us that real story so that we could see a little bit, a glimpse of the character of our Jesus. And Boaz and Jesus are a lot alike. See, what Boaz did for Naomi, Jesus wants to do for you. And like Boaz, Jesus not only has the power to do something about the situation you're in, he has the kindness, the goodness to do something about it as well. And you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to get it right every time. You don't have to be a Ruth to experience the kindness of God. He loves you. He loves you when you walk away. He loves you when you make poor decisions, when you complicate the storms in your life. He loves you even when you bankrupt your own soul. He still loves you. See, Jesus, he buys back what we traded in. And some of us just need to be reminded today that Jesus, he is our family redeemer. He can put your family back together. He can give you your peace of mind back. He can reinstate your calling. He can give you back your innocence. Jesus buys back what you traded in. And I want to show you just one last thing. It's my favorite part of the story. If you were to continue reading this story, you would find out that after Boaz and Ruth get married, that they have a son. And the Bible tells us that Naomi took that son and she loved him and she cared for him as if he were her own. And remember, Naomi started this story as the agreeable and the pleasant one. But somewhere between poor circumstances and poor decisions, she says, "Don't call me that anymore. Instead, call me Mara. I'm changing my name to Mara," which meant bitter. But I want you to see what her friends say about her as they look at her and they watch her loving her grandson as if he was her own. In chapter 4, it says, "The neighbor women said, 'Now at last, Naomi has a son again.'" She's not Mara. Don't call her Mara. Call her Naomi. Sure, Naomi made a few mistakes. Sure, Naomi screwed some things up. Sure, she was bitter. But you know what? Naomi has been bought back. Naomi has a family redeemer. And now she is agreeable again. Now she is beautiful. She is Naomi. She is not Mara. And if you are here today, you have a God that has bought you back. He has bought you back. And maybe last week on Easter Sunday, you took your first steps towards Jesus. And he wants you to know that you have been bought with a price. And when he climbed up on that cross for you, and he spread both of his arms out, he said, "Yes, I am dying for the mistakes that he made. Yes, I am dying for what she screwed up. I'm dying to buy back what she has traded in. But even more than that, I am buying her back. I am buying him back. I want him. He will no longer be defined by the choices that he has made. He will no longer be defined by the circumstances that he has been through. She is not a divorcee. She is my bride. She is not aimless. She is not a workaholic. She is mine. I have bought her." He doesn't just buy back the things that you traded off, which are that is in and of itself an amazing, amazing benefit to being a child of our God. But more than that, he buys you back. And Naomi's story was she went from bitter to bought. But what will your story be? Is it like Sean that we watched in the video and it was from addict to freedom? Was it from aimless to purpose? From broken to healed? From weak to strong? If you know our Jesus, you have a redeemer. You have a family redeemer who has both the power and the goodness to redeem whatever situation you may find yourself in today. Would you pray with me? Jesus, I thank you that your spirit fills this room today, that it fills every house and home that is logged in online. Jesus, thank you that your character, that you're not just powerful. Power without goodness is so scary. But you are so good. Thank you that you buy back the things that we traded in to chase greener pastures. And thank you that you put us back together, that you buy us back and you mend our souls. You fill empty hearts with your presence. You bring innocence back. You cleanse our minds. We love you. We worship you today. Amen.